You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In 1923, Tiranga Hiroa, or Sir Peter Buck, documented the last confirmed capture of a special fish, Dupokororo, or New Zealand grayling. Now, using ancient DNA technology, we can finally provide some answers as to why it went extinct. Now, genetic data provided can be used as a tool in search for survivors of the species. Environmental DNA and water samples from remote catchments can now be compared routinely to known DNA from the Upokororo. Now, perhaps one day this will lead to a positive match that indicates the location of said survivors. Fish populations are in sharp decline globally, and lessons learned from past extinctions like that of the Upokororo can help us preserve fish species for future generations, and hopefully we can heed the lessons from the past. Now, I spoke to one of the researchers from this study, Dr. Nick Rawlins from the Paleogenetics Lab at the University of Otago. We've spoken to Dr. Nick Rawlins before. In fact, we have spoken to him about the New Zealand grayling before. But he'll now tell us about how his research into this ancient DNA can help us treat our waters here, and essentially help us teach us about what not to do and how we can learn from the past, essentially. I'll pass it over to Dr. Nick Rawlins now.
So the New Zealand grayling, or the Upokororo, is one of New Zealand's most enigmatic fish. It's our only known extinct fish, and it's the only fish that's actually protected in New Zealand, and it's kind of what you consider the grey ghost, like Kokako of the fish world. It can appear in shoals in the middle of the night and thousands, and then disappear just as quickly. Now, it was really, really hyper-abundant in the 1800s. There were cartloads of thousands of fish caught, and then just as quickly by the late 1800s, it was disappearing. And the last confirmed sighting was in 1923 when Tarangi Hiroa, Sir Peter Buck, caught some. Now, despite that hyperabundance, there's only about 25 specimens known in the world, and they've all been preserved in formalin, which is this horrible chemical that is good for preserving colour and morphology, shape of individuals, but not good for DNA. So my master's student extraordinaire, Lockie Scarsbrook, managed to extract DNA from the grayling and sequence a complete mitochondrial genome, and we reconstructed the whakapapa of the grayling and worked out it was the most closely related to the Australian grayling, and it diverged about 15 to 23 million years ago, so after the height of the Oligocene drowning.
More than two decades later, the Upokororo received full governmental protection, but it was too late. Now, no further sightings were ever confirmed, but in 1986, the Upokororo was officially listed as extinct. Now, the Upokororo also disappeared very, very quickly, and that, you know, it's mostly unknown to Western science, but almost a century after the last living Upokororo was seen, we are now using ancient DNA to finally provide some answers. So could I just get you to touch on this?
Yeah, so as I was saying before, there are barely any specimens around of this species. So it's always been interesting of whether the species is a Gondwanan relic in New Zealand or whether it actually got here by dispersal. So the dates we've got are 15 to 23 million years. This suggests it arrived by dispersal. It could have come from Australia, or a New Zealand grayling could have gone to Australia. There's also grayling fossils in South America, about 17 million years old. So it's really looking like this group could disperse across the southern hemisphere. Part of its life history is in the sea, part of its life history is in fresh water. But while we're saying it's most closely related to the Australian grayling, that's only distant cousin at best. We're talking about older than the divergence of Kokako, Huia and Tiaki. We're talking about a split that's on par with the diversification of all the skinks in New Zealand. But what it does suggest is we, in New Zealand, we probably had a fish fauna prior to the Oligocene drowning, where about 80 to 90% of New Zealand went under the waves. And there was probably biological turnover events. So while all of the terrestrial birds like tuatara, kiwi, moa, Leiopelma frog survived, maybe the fish went extinct, and then as the alpine fault kicked in after 23 million years ago and started uplifting the land, and you got development of freshwater habitats like the big paleo lake Manaharikia, but also wide navigatable rivers that grayling need, that you could then have this job vacancy in the ecosystem that the ancestors or tupuna of grayling could fill.
Some scientists have put forward the idea that the Australian grayling could be released into rivers in New Zealand just to fill that ecological gap that was left by the extinction of the Upokororo. But, you know, we can't necessarily replace it. Although the Australian grayling is quite similar, it is even possible that it still could be out there in a remote waterway, based on what I'm reading here. And even that's not unprecedented. You know, Takahe were also thought to be extinct before a small population was rediscovered in the Murchison Mountains in 1948. So could I just get your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So if you're going to reintroduce the Australian grayling into New Zealand, it's a form of ecological surrogacy. You ideally want a close related species to fill the niche or the job vacancy that the extinct one had. But with 15 to 23 million years of separation between the Australian and New Zealand, they're distant cousins at best. And what we don't know is how ecologically different they were. So one of the things our lab wants to do is to sequence the complete Tauanga genome, or complete genetic blueprint of the New Zealand grayling, compare it to the Australian grayling that collaborators have sequenced in Australia, and work out what are the functional differences between these individuals. Now, there is a chance the grayling could still be surviving. I'd love for it to be rediscovered like the Takahe, and it would possibly be in the headwaters of pristine navigatable rivers in New Zealand. So you could use environmental DNA to basically see if you could find the DNA of the grayling. We have been working with Wilder Lab in Wellington, who does a lot of environmental DNA ecological monitoring across New Zealand, and running our grayling sequences across their database. And so far there is no grayling popping up, but it doesn't mean it's not hanging on in some river somewhere.
How can we learn from the extinction of the grayling in regards to how we're treating our rivers and overfishing and such today?
Yeah, so the grayling's extinction was probably multi-factored. We've got overfishing. There was cartloads of fish caught and traded. We've got predation from introduced trout. There's probably fungal diseases that were introduced. There's records of masses of floating dead grayling washing down rivers in Australia covered in white fungus. And we've probably also, with the grayling, got a thing called source-sink dynamics, where you can think of grayling as one big metapopulation, and you're having individuals pulled out of pristine rivers and put into polluted rivers where they die, and that causes also the populations of the pristine rivers to plummet. That was one of the things historically people saw, is why did the populations of the pristine rivers go? Now, all of those factors are still around today, with disease, with overfishing, with pollution, and in very Monty Python style, the New Zealand grayling is the only protected fish. And it was only predicted after it probably went extinct. None of our Tauanga species of freshwater fish, our galaxes, our banded kokopu, or anything, are protected at all. And so what we desperately need is protection for our freshwater fish fauna, and to learn from the mistakes of the grayling's extinction, so we're not doomed to repeat it again. And we may already have done. One of my other master's students, Adam Kitchen, is looking at getting DNA out of these wet-preserved galaxid specimens. There are some specimens that were discovered in the 1960s in the Maroria River catchment, which flows to the west. All other individuals of this species are in rivers that flow to the east, so we may be looking at a new cryptic species, but it hasn't been observed since they were collected in the 60s. We don't even know if they were there. Maybe the species gone extinct before we can even describe it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add in regards to what we can learn from this research?
I think one of the other things we can learn is ancient DNA technologies are rapidly advancing. Like, we have been able to sequence complete nuclear genomes from ancient fossils for years, but what's only now just coming to fruition is being able to go to these wet preserved specimens of museum collections, whether preserved in isopropanol or formalin or what I affectionately call mystery clear liquid, and get the genomes out of these specimens. And they're usually historic, but they're vitally important. We can start looking at the impacts of European colonisation on New Zealand and everything. So we're beginning to unlock more and more of museum collections as this really important genetic treasure trove to answer some of the big picture questions of what are the impacts of humans and climate change and how do we learn from it.
That was Dr. Nick Rawlins from the Paleogenetics Lab at the University of Otago, speaking about the ancient DNA that they are researching in regards to the extinct New Zealand grayling.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.